This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday for another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime stories, as we do every Wednesday at RelicRadio.com. Our first story this week comes from Sherlock Holmes. It's the Manor House case, story from 1945. After that, it's Barry Craig, confidential investigator, and The Lonely Corner, his story from November 3rd, 1953.
This episode from the life of Sherlock Holmes will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And I sure wish you could listen to this story with a glass of Petri California Port right at your elbow. Petri Port. That's the wine that's perfect after dinner when you're just taking things easy. And say, if you've never tried Petri Port, if you've never tasted that wonderful, rich red wine, well, this is the week to do it. I'll tell you why. This is National Wine Week, sort of a celebration we're having to mark the return to good living. Your wine merchant is kind of rolling out the red plush carpet this week, and among other things, he wants to prove to you that you just couldn't ask for a more delicious wine than Petri wine. Why don't you take him up on it? And begin by becoming acquainted with Petri Port. You'll really love it, and so will your guests. And say, you can serve Petri Port proudly, because after all, the name Petri is the proudest name in the history of American wines. That's a fact. Well, here's the patio of Dr. Watson's Northern California bungalow, but where's the doctor?
Here I am, Mr. Bartell, out in the garden.
Okay, I'll be right there. Oh, sitting by the fish pond, huh, Doctor?
Yes, my boy, it's rather pleasant out here for a change. Has it ever occurred to you how stupid the expression of a goldfish is, Mr. Bartell?
Well, I can't say I've ever given much thought, Doctor. Why?
You see this foolish little fellow here with his silly little mouth opening and closing as though he were constantly astonished?
What is this? I thought you were a fish lover.
Yes, I am. But as I was brooding over tonight's story, that goldfish seemed to be making faces at me as though it were trying to remind me of how my face must have looked on a certain dune evening in 1890.
Sounds to me as if you're going to tell a story against yourself, Doctor.
I am, young fellow, my lad.
What happened?
One Sunday morning in 1890, I dropped round to visit my friend in Baker Street. Mrs. Hudson told me that he was out, but suggested that I wait in our old rooms for his return and promised me a pot of strong tea and some buttered scones as an inducement. As I walked into the sitting room, I was astonished to see Holmes standing there, a bag in one hand and a coat in the other.
My dear chap, how are you?
I'm fine, Holmes. I'm surprised to see you, though. Mrs. Hudson told me that you were out.
I have been, Watson, on a case. I just returned by my private entrance for some necessary apparatus.
Oh, could I come with you? My wife's here, you know, but my practice is quite slack at the moment.
Not even my trusty old friend Watson can accompany me on this case. It's a ticklish business. Fate of two nations hangs in the balance. I must work alone. Sorry to leave you like this, old fellow. Goodbye.
Well, Mrs. Hudson's making me some tea and some buttered scones. Can't you wait and share them with me?
Ha, ha. Good old Watson. You're the one fixed point in a changing age. Empires are tottering and you talk of tea and buttered scones.
Oh, I'm sorry, you must be awful. Goodbye, old fellow.
Oh, don't look so sad, old fellow. The time is ripe. I'll tell you all about the case and you can write it up in your memoirs. Goodbye, old boy.
Buttered scones. I haven't got any appetite for them now.
Did you enjoy the scones, Dr. Watson?
Oh, I'm afraid my appetite disappeared when Mr. Holmes left.
It did it? I see you've eaten them all just the same.
What? Oh, yes, so I did.
I've got a surprise for you, Doctor. Inspector Lestrade is downstairs.
Who is he?
He came to see Mr. Holmes, but when I told him he was out, the inspector said he'd like to see you.
Oh, he did? Oh, splendid. Ask him to come up, please, will you, Mrs. Hudson?
Aye, sir. Will you come up, please, Inspector?
Thank you, Mrs. Hudson.
Can I butter you up a few more scones,
No,
Doctor?
No, thank you. I really couldn't eat them.
I'll just go and make some more the same. He'll eat them if I fix them, Doctor.
No, really, thank you. There you are, Lestrade.
Hello, Dr. Watson. Here's a pretty kettle of fish and no mistake.
Huh? What's the trouble?
Well, I want Mr. Holmes' help on a most important case. Where's he gone?
Well, he's out on a very secret matter.
You know where he is, Doctor?
Well, naturally, I know where he is, Lestrade. My old friend never keeps me in the dark, but I'm not admitted to tell you. Pepson, I could help you a bit. After all, I'm not exactly unfamiliar with my friend's methods.
That's true, but just the same. Well, Doctor, two heads are always better than one, even if one is a sheep's head, as my old mother used to say.
Are you suggesting that I'm a sheep's head?
No, I'm not suggesting anything, Doctor. I'm just telling you what my old mother used to say.
I'm really not very interested in what your old mother used to say. And now, Lestrade, your problem, please.
Well, it's simple enough, Doctor. A German diplomat, Graf Otto von Eldenstein is his name, is in England on a very secret mission.
Graf Otto von Eldenstein? Yes, I've heard of him. Pray continue.
Well, this von Eldenstein, staying at the manor house at Ampton Wick, not far out of London. This morning, somebody slipped past his guards and threw a bomb into his study. His secretary was killed, and he would have been too, if it hadn't been that he'd left the room a few minutes earlier.
Well, these second-hand investigations are very little useless, Stard. We must both go down to the manor house at Hampton Wick and examine the situation on the spot.
All right.
Get out the timetable and look up the next train, will you?
Yes. Yeah.
And while you're doing that, I'll go and tell Mrs. Hudson where I'm going.
All right, you are, Doctor.
I was just bringing them up to you.
Scones? Well, who can think of scones when an empire is tottering?
You're sure you're feeling quite well, Doctor?
Of course I am. Now, listen to me, Miss Hudson. If Mr. Holmes should return, please tell him that I've gone to Hampton Wick with Inspector Lestrade to investigate the von Heldenstein business.
The von Heldenstein business? Aye, Doctor, I'll tell him that.
Mr. Holmes didn't tell you where he was going, did he?
No, Doctor, he didn't.
Oh, I see. All right. Well, thank you, Mrs. Hudson.
Are you sure you don't want the scones, Doctor?
I might as well take him along. I dare say Lestrade could eat him.
Ah, you're the one, Doctor.
Yes, I suppose this is rather exciting. Just the same, I wish I knew what Holmes was doing at this moment.
You are Herr Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, I presume Graf Otto von Heldenstein is expecting me.
Yeah, Herr Holmes. He was so anxious that you would come here to the manor house.
I left immediately after I got his summons.
He's very weak. He has lost much blood from the injuries he received this morning.
Injuries that no one knows about, eh?
Nein, Herr Holmes. Only I, his old and faithful servant, knows. Follow me, please. I will take you to him.
Franz, is that you, Franz?
Ja, Herr Graf. And with me is Herr Sherlock Holmes.
Oh. Thank heaven you are here, Holmes.
I hope I can be of service to you, sir.
You can. You can be of great service. Sit close to my bed, Holmes. I have not much strength to speak.
I'm listening, Herr Graf.
You must impersonate me.
Yes, so I gathered when I received your message.
I am in England on a most delicate and important mission for the German government. Within a few weeks, your government and mine will conclude a treaty outlining the German and British spheres of interest in Africa.
I see. Obviously, that bomb was thrown this morning by someone who does not wish the treaty to be concluded.
Yeah, exactly, Herr Holmes. That is why you must impersonate me. In 24 hours' time, I shall be well enough to resume my work. In the meanwhile, you can keep the secret of my injuries and also have the opportunity of finding the assassin.
I'm quite prepared to undertake the impersonation, sir, but how can I possibly hope to deceive the members of your personal staff?
With the exception of Franz here and poor Fräulein Ullmeier, who was killed in the explosion that injured me, my staff is new. They have joined me here from the German consulate in London. They will believe that you are me.
Very well, sir. I'll try it.
I have heard of your skill in the art of disguises. And also, it seems to me we are not so unlike each other.
I was about to comment on that fact myself, sir. Yes, I think the moustache and side whisker will work wonders. If I can make the accent reasonably convincing.
I will coach you, my friend.
Splendid. Help me off with my coat, will you, Franz? Get me towels and a mirror.
Jawohl, Herr Holmes.
And while I'm applying my makeup, Herr Graf, perhaps you will be so good as to give me the complete circumstances regarding this morning's attempt on your life. If I'm to impersonate you successfully, I must have all the facts at my fingertips.
Wunderbar. It is amazing, Herr Holmes. Even I can hardly tell you from my mask.
Yes, I think it's the wig that puts the finishing touch to my disguise. How did it look to you, Herr Graf? Mm-hmm.
Colossal. I feel as if I were looking into a mirror.
And my accent, you find it reasonably convincing?
Oh, yeah. Extremely so. Try it once again, Herr Holmes.
Yeah, Herr Graf. It gives me the greatest pleasure to do what you ask of me.
Prächtig, splendid, Herr Holmes, splendid.
A cab has drawn up at the gate. Two men are getting out. You can see them from the window here.
Oh, it's the police, possibly, or...
Great Scott! It wasn't a mistrap.
Friends of yours, Herr Holmes?
One of them is my close colleague, and the other is a detective inspector from Scotland Yard.
Oh, you must keep up the deception, even with your friends.
As a matter of fact, my friend's investigations will prove an excellent mask for my own search for the assassin. But, well, this is a delicious situation. I hope they won't recognize me.
I am Graf Otto von Heldenstein, gentlemen. You wish to see me?
How do you do, sir? My name is Watson, Dr. Watson, and this is Inspector Lestrade of Scotland Yard.
How do you do, sir?
Inspector, Dr. Watson, may I ask if I have the great distinction of addressing the Dr. Watson, friend of Sherlock Holmes?
Oh, I'm very flattered that you know me, Herr Graf.
But who does not know the great Dr. Watson? In my country, many people think that you are the real brains of the combination. Tell me, Herr Doctor, is that true?
Well, I wouldn't exactly say that.
Of course, you have both come here to investigate what occurred this morning.
Yes, we have, sir.
Please sit down. If you can find any furniture that is unbroken.
Oh, thank you, sir. I must say the place is a mess. And now, Herr Graf, please tell us exactly what happened.
Yeah. I will tell you everything, Herr Doctor. This morning I was working in here with my secretary, poor Fräulein Ulmer. I had occasion to go upstairs to my room to get some necessary papers. As I came down the staircase and to return here, I heard a scream from Fräulein Ulmer. A moment later, there was a most frightful explosion. The concussion stunned me. When I came to, my poor secretary was dead.
What people were inside the house at the time of the explosion?
The servants were all at the church. The only people here was my secretary, who was killed. My servant, Franz. I can vouch for him because he was upstairs when I went for my documents. There were three other people in the house, however. Madame Lisa Varona, my hostess and owner of this house. A young Englishman from the Home Office. His name is Hilary Adams. And the third person in the house was a member of the German embassy, Colonel Schweiger.
Oh, then it's just a matter of cross-questioning the three of them as to their alibis at the time of the explosion. I'll take them one at a time, Lestrade. Ring for that servant fellow. What was his name?
Franz.
Franz, that's the name.
This is a rare privilege to watch a master detective at work.
Yes, Herr Graf. I shouldn't be surprised if my methods teach you quite a bit about the art of detection.
Herr Dr. Watson, this is Colonel Schweiger of the German Embassy.
Where were you, Colonel Schweiger, when the explosion occurred this morning?
I was discussing the military tactics of Clausewitz with one of the guards near the front gates.
Yeah, well, what was the name of the guard, sir?
Carter. Mr. Arthur Carter.
Yeah, I'll check on that.
Thank you, Colonel Schweiger. Please ask Madame Lisa Varona to come in with it.
Questions, nothing but questions. Leave me alone.
Sorry, madam. All I want to know is, where were you when the explosion occurred this morning?
Where was I? In my boudoir, listening to that stupid dabblings of the young Englishman, Hilary Adams. Herr Graf, when I offered you my house, I did not know that I would have to put up with the love-making of your staff. Every everywhere he follows.
No. Please don't get so excited, Madame Verona.
Questions. Stupid young English puppy is making calf eyes at me. My beautiful house blown to pieces, and all you doing.
Mr. Adams, where were you when the explosion occurred?
In Madame Verona's suite.
You swear to that?
Of course I do. You may ask her.
I've already done so, sir. Thank you, Mr. Adams. Thank you. That's all. You go. Well, Lestrade, did you check on Colonel Schweiger's alibi?
Yes, Doctor. He was telling the truth. He was talking to the Colonel when the explosion happened.
Dear me, Herr Doctor, your examination has not been very successful, has it, sir? Everyone has an alibi.
Yes, but the alibis of Madame Verona and the young Englishman, Hilary Adams, depend on each other's words. They might be lying. And you've been dealing with criminals as long as I have, Herr Graf. You learn to look far deeper than the obvious. Yes, the Stard and I shall return to London now and make some inquiries. You will hear from me, sir, before the day is over.
Yes. Well, I'm much obliged to you, Doctor, for a very nice meal. Although we've been talking in circles.
Not entirely. Anyway, I have come to one important decision.
Oh, and what's that, Doctor?
Madame Verona is addicted to the use of drugs. The pupils of her eyes were contracted to pinpoints. It's an invariable indication of drug addiction. Lestrade, you go to Scotland Yard and see what you can find out about her, and I'll go back to my house. You can meet me there later. Yes, I wish Mary wasn't away. It's the cook's eye out, confound it. I can't see a thing. I'll strike a match. That's better. Hello? Who's that in the drawing room? Who is it?
Watson! I thought you'd never come.
Holmes, where on earth do you spring from?
Never mind that, old chap. I've come to warn you. Keep out of the von Heldenstein business if you value your life.
Well, how did you know that I was working on the case?
I haven't time now, but I implore you. Keep out of it. There are dangerous forces at work. Forces that would snuff out your life without a thought. Please believe me, old chap. And do as I... Quick, Watson! Under the dining room! Bomb, Watson! Watson, down! The bomb!
You'll hear the rest of Dr. Watson's story in just a few seconds. All the time I need to remind you that, what with this being National Wine Week, if you want to take a gift to a young lady, why not take her a bottle of Petri California Muscatel? Petri Muscatel is the kind of wine you'd serve a queen. That Petri Muscatel has the flavor of plump, sun-ripened muscat grapes, and is it ever good? You couldn't ask for a more delicious after-dinner wine, or a more delicious wine to serve when company comes. Remember, it's Muscatel, but the important thing is, it's Petri. Petri Muscatel. And now back to Dr. Watson and tonight's adventure, the Manor House case. Well, that was a fine place to break off your story, Doctor, I must say.
Mr. Bartell, I thought I'd keep you in as much suspense as possible.
Well, what happened next? Were you Holmes injured when that bomb exploded?
No, my boy. The concussion of the explosion knocked me out for a few minutes. When I came to, Holmes had disappeared.
And I can imagine where he'd gone. Go on, Doctor.
Soon after that, Lestrade arrived on the scene, and after a quick and fruitless examination of the premises, we decided to return once more to the manor house. And so, an hour later, I was telling my story to the man I still thought to be the Graf Otto von Heldenstein.
This is dreadful, Herr Doctor. The bomb might easily have killed you.
Oh, I was ready for it, sir. Quick thinking and presence of mind are my stock in trade, you know. When I heard the crash, I flung myself under the dining room table.
Oh, I'm most distressed that you yourself should be exposed to such danger.
Not at all, Herr Graf. As a matter of fact, I exposed myself deliberately to the attack. It's an old army trick, you know, what we call drawing the enemy's fire.
Calm now, Doctor.
You don't mean to tell us that you expected to have that bomb chucked through the window at you?
Of course I did, Lestrade. The assassin knew that I was in working on the case. He followed me to London and fell into my trap, just as I intended him to, by showing his hand.
Well, I don't see what he's got you, Doctor.
I myself must admit I cannot see that you are any nearer to finding the murderer.
On the contrary, sir, the case is nearly solved.
Well, I don't see how you figure that one out, Doctor.
Elementary, my dear Lestrade, elementary. One of the three people under suspicion followed me to my house tonight. The second bomb was thrown at approximately 7 o'clock. Now, it's only a question of finding which one of the three cannot account for his movements at that time. Then we shall know the murderer.
You want to cross-examine them again, Doctor?
Yes, Lestrade. Bring them in, please. One at a time. Colonel Schweiger, where were you at 7 o'clock tonight?
Discussing the military tactics of Clausewitz with Mr. Carter of the Home Office Guards.
Great Scott, that's what you were doing at 11 o'clock this morning, too.
It would take many days of discussion for two students to appreciate all the subtleties of Clausewitz.
Yeah, I'll check on that again, Doctor.
Oh, thank you, Lestrade. And please ask Madame Verona to come in, will you?
Questions, questions, and still more questions. Where was I 7 tonight, you asked me? I was listening to more babblings from that stupid young Englishman. Ask him for yourself.
Mr. Adams, where were you at 7 tonight?
With Madame Verona in her boudoir.
There is a curious sameness about the pattern of it in this house, is there not, Herr Doctor?
Well, I checked on Colonel Schweiger's statement. It was true. He was talking to Carter at 7 o'clock, all right. Well, could the other two account for themselves, Doctor?
Well, once again, they alibied for each other, but this time I begin to doubt them.
Oh, why do you say that, Herr Doctor?
Well, I would accept Madame Verona's alibi for young Adams. Obviously, she loathes the boy and wouldn't perjure herself for him. On the other hand, he worships her, and I'm certain that he wouldn't have any scruples about lying to provide an alibi for her.
Well, you've got a point there, Doctor.
Yes, I regard her with great suspicion. Yeah, come in. Yes, Mr. Adams?
Dr. Watson, I've been worrying about Madame Verona. I was afraid you wouldn't believe my alibi for her.
Indeed?
I have another, an unbiased witness who can testify that Madame Verona was in this house at 7 tonight. Come in, Franz.
Jawohl, gnädiger Herr.
Franz, did you see Madame Verona at 7 tonight?
Yeah. I take up 2 glasses of sherry to her. It was a few minutes before 7.
Thank you, Franz. Thank you, Mr. Adams. I appreciate your concern. You may go.
Yeah. Seems to me we're still traveling in circles, Doctor.
On the contrary, my dear Lestrade, the case is solved.
Indeed. You astonish me, Herr Doctor. Who is the guilty party?
We will know in a minute, sir. Lestrade, bring the three suspects in here, please.
Aye, sir.
When they are assembled, I will give you the solution to the mystery. Ladies and gentlemen, the mystery is solved, and I must apologize for any little inconvenience that you've undergone. You, Madame Verona, you, Colonel Schweiger, and you, Mr. Adams, have all unshakable alibis. Therefore, the solution's obvious. As my dear friend Sherlock Holmes has often said, eliminate the impossible, and whatever remains, no matter how improbable, is the truth. Therefore, the only person that could have thrown both bombs is you or yourself, Graf Otto von Heldenstein.
Why, George, I believe you're right, Doctor.
What have you got to say for yourself, sir?
That I too, Herr Doctor, have an unshakable alibi.
Oh, what is it?
I was with you, Herr Doctor, when the second bomb was thrown.
What on earth are you talking about? I was alone.
Oh, come now, old fellow, that's not true.
Holmes.
What?
Holmes, how could you?
Mr. Holmes. Well, strike me.
Don't be angry with me, old chap.
Well, you made a complete fool of me.
No, not at all,
me,
my dear fellow. Not at all.
I've never seen
you got the real solution to the case, as usual, Mr. Adams.
Yes, Lestrade, I have.
Well, let's hear it, then. Might as well show me up
for
the acid.
Oh, my dear Watson, stop berating yourself. You really handled the case very well. You made only one mistake.
Huh?
May I revise that dictum of mine which you just quoted? Eliminate the possible, and then if nothing remains, some part of the impossible must be possible.
Which part?
Colonel Schweiger's alibi was valid. So was Madame Verona's, since it was corroborated by the trusty Franz. But what does your alibi rest on, Mr. Adams?
Madame Verona's told you I was here at 7.
Yes, but Madame Verona is addicted to the use of drugs.
I'm sure that you spotted that fact, Watson.
Yes, yes, well, I did.
Your mistake, old chap, was in not drawing the correct conclusion. Mr. Adams' alibi depends on the unsupported word of a drug addict. Now, use of drugs notoriously destroys, first of all, the sense of time. Any trick such as the resetting of clocks could be worked on her without her noticing. Her word on a time alibi is completely valueless.
Then Adams is the man.
Fools, meddlers. Why don't you...
He's a murderer and a traitor. Well, now that we're back in Baker Street, Watson, I may as well tell you that I had my suspicions of Adams from the first.
You did? Why?
Well, my brother Mycroft had told me that he was suspected of being a traitor at heart. He's been under observation for some years. He was purposely given this assignment as a definite test of his integrity.
Well, I understand it all now, Holmes. It's the same. I did make an ass of myself in front of Lestrade,
too. Oh, don't worry about it, old chap. Please don't worry. You always can correct that impression, you know. Yours will be the last word.
Oh, how do you mean?
Well, when you come to write this story in your memoirs, my dear fellow, you can always do a little, re-editing of your own part. Posterity never need know.
Doctor, that was really a swell story.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it. Sort of made me out of a bit of a fool, though.
Oh, nothing of the kind, Doctor. I agree with Holmes. You did a splendid job.
Oh, you really think
it is? After all, you did line up suspects for him, didn't you?
Well, come to think of it, yes, of course I did.
And you did make the point that Madame Barone was a drug addict.
Yes, by Jove, so I did.
And you did say that Mr. Adams' alibi could be a lie.
By Jove, you're right. I did solve that case for Holmes, after all. Mr. Bartell, did anyone ever tell you that you're really a very smart young man? I wish you and I could work on a case together.
We can't. Starting tonight.
No. Really?
Sure. In celebration of National Wine Week, I brought you a case of Petri wine. And I suggest we start on it right now with a glass of port.
What a fellow.
What a wine. Petri wine. We know that's really good because the Petri family has been making fine wine since the 1800s. For generations. Ever since they started the Petri business, the Petri family has been turning luscious California grapes into fragrant, delicious wine. And during all that time, they've been hanging on down from father to son, all their skill and knowledge and experience. The Petri wine you buy today is the result of all that skill and knowledge and experience. That's why you can't go wrong when you choose a Petri wine, because Petri took time to bring you good wine. And now, Dr. Watson, what's the prescription for next week's story?
Well, now, let me see. Next week, Mr. Bartell, I think I can promise you a most entertaining adventure. It concerns a famous magician, a female spy of unusual beauty, and a man even more brilliant than Holmes himself. His older brother, Mycroft.
Sounds terrific, Doctor. And before we say goodnight to our friends, I want to remind them that our men overseas need the Merchant Marine to bring them back home. The Merchant Marine got them there, and it'll bring them back if you help. Right now, the Merchant Marine needs experienced mates, engineers, ABs, firemen, oiler, water tenders, and chief cooks. If you qualify, write or wire collect at once to Merchant Marine, Washington 25, D.C. Bring the boys home. Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Greek Interpreter. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in Sherlock Holmes series. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. This is Hip Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studios. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Murderers must have a lot of trouble keeping their books balanced. For one thing, they can't always be sure when they're going to make their next killing. And for another, so many of their assets are buried.
The National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with America's number one detective, Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Barry Craig speaking. Being a confidential investigator can easily become an office job if you've got an office, which I have. And you spend all your time in it, which I don't. Clients cross you up sometimes, though. Joey Carter made a stab in that direction on this particular day. I had a meal at Willie's Wagon, if you could call it a meal.
Well, what'd you call him, Mr. Craig?
Penance.
Big joke. Something wrong with a hamburger?
Well, it's been fatally wounded, Willie.
Huh.
Next time you might wait till it dies before serving it.
My customer should live so long.
Why, thank you, Willie.
I can remember a time when Private Dix could hardly read. We were all making witty remarks.
Sorry.
Have a cup of coffee?
Oh, I'm not that sorry.
There's nothing wrong with a coffee.
Well, there's nothing wrong with sulfuric acid either, but I'll hold on to my stomach lining for a while longer, if you don't mind.
What's so special about your stomach lining?
It's attached to me.
Ah, you're getting sentimental. Which reminds me, there was a guy in here looking for you about an hour ago.
Oh?
Nervous little punk. I gave him your office address.
He must have missed me. An hour ago, I was on my way here.
Yeah?
What was he nervous about?
He didn't whisper nothing in my shell like his.
Then how'd you know he was nervous?
He couldn't keep his hand from trembling. The one that was holding the gun, I mean.
Willie had nothing more to offer except the coffee I'd already turned down, so I got out. After Willie explained that my prospective client hadn't exactly been waving his gun around. He'd just been clutching it in a side pocket. Jake, who'd given up a handful of stony acres in Vermont for an elevator cage in the building where I had my office, added a few, very few, well-chosen words.
Hi.
Hello, Jake. Nice day.
Yep.
How have things been on Madison Avenue today?
Dull.
No pretty girls?
I reckon there was.
Now, don't tell me you're getting old.
Busted my glasses.
Oh. Well, tomorrow will be another day.
Yep.
But I'd like to get up to my office before then.
Oh, I keep forgetting. Going up?
Where else could I go from the ground floor?
I guess you're going up. Other fellow went up, too.
Which other fellow?
One looking for you.
Well, thanks for letting me in on it. Was he a small man?
Yeah.
Nervous?
Yep.
Said he'd wait for me in the office?
Yeah. Ain't come down either.
Which means he's still up there, unless he used the back stairs.
Yeah.
Did he mention why he wanted to see me?
No.
He was carrying a gun, wasn't he?
Oh, you heard about him.
From Willie. He tried to get a hold of me at the wagon, but...
Fella drink any of Willie's coffee?
I don't know.
You better hurry on to your office, because if that fella did...
Yeah?
He'd be needing major surgery.
You're exaggerating.
Well, I had some of that coffee when I first come to town, before I knew better.
You're still alive?
Yeah, but mighty feeble. You just hear something, Mr. Craig?
Your buzzer. Somebody's ringing for you downstairs.
What's the matter with them? Can't they walk up a few stairs?
They may never have used your elevator before.
You want again... Noisy fellas. Excuse me.
Not at all. Jake's elevator headed downstairs at considerably less than the speed of light. I headed for my office, in no particular hurry. I don't like small men with guns. Sometimes they get to thinking they need a gun as an equalizer. It might be psychological, but bullets never hurt of Sigmund Freud. I didn't spot him when I first got into the office. It was late afternoon. The dying sunlight didn't quite make it to the corners of the room. It was in a corner that my client was waiting for me. A lonely corner. The loneliest of all. The corner where a man creeps to die.
The knife went in under the left shoulder blade and pierced the heart. He died maybe an hour ago. Death was not instantaneous. There's no identification on him. Labels on his clothes have been ripped off. Until further notice, he'll go on the books as John Doe, deceased.
Briefly and beautifully put, Lieutenant Rogers.
Let's not be formal, Barry.
You, taking Junior with you?
Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll turn up something with his fingerprints.
The odds are good.
The gun he was carrying had its serial number filed off. Professional.
Yeah. Makes it funny, though.
Why?
His prints are on record. Whoever killed him must have known that. Why bother with stripping the body of identification?
Time, maybe.
I suppose.
He was trying to get in touch with you. Somebody was anxious about that.
I'd imagine so.
Somebody's anxiety killed John Doe.
Looks that way.
We'll find out who John Doe was sooner or later. Once we get that, we might be able to make a good guess about why he wanted to see you.
That's possible.
The boy with the knife wouldn't care for that. He might try using that knife again. Be careful, will you, Barry?
It was good advice, but how can you be careful when you don't know what you've got to be careful about or who? Tracing John Doe was taking time. Time in which the sun dived behind the high stone walls of the city and got lost. Time in which I got tired of sitting around in a darkened office and staring into a corner where nothing was anymore. So I got out. I buzzed the elevator quickly and settled down to wait. But the elevator started up fast. I didn't think much of it until it was close to my floor. Then I thought in a hurry. In all the years Jake had been piloting that elevator, he'd never responded that fast. I moved back, pulling at the gun in my pocket. I didn't make it by the time the elevator door opened, so I dived for the carpet. I made a mental note to speak to the management. That carpet hadn't been swept in months. The little stranger in the elevator hadn't waited to see if the bullets had found me. I thought maybe I could let him know if I got down the back stairs fast enough. Then I ran into Jake, at the foot of the stairs, slumped behind the door that led to them. Jake. Jake.
Yeah, I remember correct.
Boy, you had me worried for a minute.
Hi. Head don't feel so good.
You were hit on it.
Maybe that's why I don't feel so good. Must have been hit by a piece of my farm up in Vermont.
A rocky piece.
That was the only kind there was.
Here.
Thanks, Mr. Craig.
How is it?
It was better laying down. I figure I'll live, though.
Good.
Getting my glasses back tomorrow.
You mean you'll be able to see the girls on Madison Avenue again?
Yeah. Well, maybe we better get back to the lobby. Might be customers.
All right, but hold it where you are. Well, the lobby's empty. Come on.
You figured the fellow that hit me might still be around?
Possibly.
Too bad he ain't.
Not so bad. He was carrying a gun.
Oh?
Minus a few bullets now.
Well, I took the elevator up.
When I rang for it.
Well, you got dust on your suit, Mr. Craig. Carpet upstairs?
Yeah.
Ought to be swept sometime.
You might take it up with the cleaning woman.
Yeah. When she gets over her lumbago.
The carpet hasn't been swept for years.
Well, Miss Abercrombie's had lumbago for years.
Jake, did you see the man who slugged you?
Not too good. My glasses, you see.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's probably a half a dozen miles from here by now. So long, Jake.
Going out?
Sure.
Mr. Craig.
Yeah?
The fella that took them shots at you, he might be hanging around.
What for?
Another helping.
No, it was a professional job. Hit and run. If they don't make it the first time, they wait until they can arrange another setup.
Well, I hope you're right, Mr. Craig.
So, do I. My analysis was probably right. That didn't prevent me from holding my breath as I went through the lobby door. Then across the strip of pavement that separated me from my car and into it. I didn't waste any time getting underway. No gunfire. I decided I could start breathing again.
Mr. Craig?
I beg your pardon?
Oh, I'm the one who should...
Let's not quibble about who begs whose pardon. I'm just a little worried about whether this is my car.
It's your car.
I never noticed that it came equipped with a small blonde before.
Do you mind?
I was a normal red-blooded American boy, Miss...
My name is Doris. Doris Cheney.
How do you do? And do you spend much of your time parking in other people's cars?
Only when the other people are Barry Craig.
Must be my new tie. Man who sold it to me said it would attract blondes like flies.
It's not a very nice comparison. Flies are pests.
Blondes can be, too. On the other hand... Now that the gay chit-chat is over, well...
But I had to see you.
I've got an office.
Oh, I couldn't be seen going there.
You're shy?
I'm afraid.
And you figured staking out in my car, you'd be safe.
Well, for a while, anyway, and eventually you'd come out and get in the car.
And then we'd be together.
Yes.
Without witnesses.
Yes.
You're fumbling with your bag. Is there a gun in it?
No, there isn't. I'm nervous.
It's too early. We haven't come to the reasons for your being here yet.
We've come to the reasons.
My mistake.
The name of the man who was killed in your office today was William Cheney.
I concentrated on my driving. Concentrating on a small blonde is more fun, but is more likely to end up in a crash. She didn't add anything to the identification. I didn't figure she was finished yet, though. I gave her the cue. Relative?
My husband.
No relative.
We haven't been living together for some time.
He made noise when he ate soup?
He was a thief.
Oh, and that wore on your nerves.
Well, I hadn't known when I married him.
That happened.
You don't sound as if you believe me.
I don't have to believe you. You're not a client.
What?
Some reason or other, people never tell the truth to detectives if they can help it. Maybe they figure detectives should be smart enough to find out the truth for themselves. Sometimes detectives do.
But if I were a client?
I'd have to believe you. It's not on my license, but it's the way I play.
I want you to believe me, Mr. Craig.
It's 50 a day in expenses.
That's not too bad.
Depends on what you're buying. Suppose you hire me. What are you in the market for? An alibi, maybe?
Alibi? For what?
Your husband didn't die of old age.
Oh, you think I...
You could have. You knew where my office was. You knew he died there.
But...
Did you kill him?
No.
Okay. For now, we'll accept that as being true. The next thing is, what do you need a confidential investigator for?
I know who killed my husband.
She had a habit of throwing small bombshells as though she didn't know they were explosive. I sat that one out for a few seconds. It gave me time to wonder if the car that was trailing us intended to get any closer. It didn't. Not yet, anyway. You know who killed William Cheney?
Yes.
The district attorney will love you with a great love if you drop in and tell him.
I can't.
You don't care for the legal profession?
I don't have any proof.
That's a discouraging detail.
But I know it has to be...
Has to be who?
You've been staring up into the rearview mirror all the time. Why?
Car's been following us ever since we left my office. Who does it have to be?
Car? Then someone...
So far as we know, no one saw anything but me getting into my car and driving away. Who killed your husband?
They must have noticed...
It's night. They've not been close enough to make any identifications. Maybe not even to spot the fact I've got a passenger. Why are you holding out on me?
I'm not, only...
The headlights are getting bigger. We're going to have company pretty soon. Look, Mrs. Cheney, it's corny. Somebody with something important to tell is stalling about it until it's too late.
You mean until they get killed?
Yeah. And by then, the something important isn't important anymore. At least, not to the one who dies.
John Hurley.
John Hurley.
My husband... Worked for him.
And since your husband's profession was a thief, you mean he stole for him?
Yes.
That's background. Now hand me motive.
My husband stole something. Hurley thought he was going to double-cross him, not turn it over to him.
Was he?
I don't know. I haven't seen Bill for months, since we separated.
You make the marriage sound like ancient history. Your news is fresh, though.
Well, Bill phoned me lots of times, begged me to take him back. But...
What was it he was holding out?
Well, I'm not sure... Jewels, I think.
Uh-huh. Slide off the seat and get on the floor.
What?
Do as I say.
All right. What's wrong?
Car trailing us is getting too close. I've been shot at once today. It could happen again. I don't want you in the line of fire.
But they might not miss again.
I know. That's why I'm going to dedicate a fender or two to self-preservation. Grab onto something. We're going to have a small collision. What happened? happened immediately after I'd cut my car in front of the one coming up behind, you'll have to consult somebody else. Obviously, both cars spun, slid across the street, and wound up attacking a lamppost. I was among those present, sure, but I wasn't sitting up and taking notice. I was lying down and being unconscious. Oh.
Barry.
Oh. For a little while, I thought maybe my sins had been overlooked and I was in a better place. But what would the voice of Lieutenant Rogers be doing in a better place?
I guess you're alive.
Thanks.
Oh, ouch.
I could have told you this was no time to brush your hair back.
It's my older brother who has two heads. Maybe I'm my older brother.
That lump you're fondling isn't another head.
Oh. Fred.
Yeah?
News.
You and another car had a collision with each other and a lamppost.
That I remember. Partially, anyway. Except the collision was intentional.
Oh?
I'll explain later. You keep going.
Well, a crowd collected immediately, but despite that, or maybe because of that, whoever was in the other car disappeared.
Too bad. However, that crowd probably saved my skin. The car was trailing mine, Trav. Outran me. I figured it would probably outgun me, too, so I had an accident.
For a man with a thick skull, that was probably the brightest thing to do.
Thank you, Lieutenant. I don't feel very much like making sudden movements with my head. That's why I haven't looked around, but, Trav, does there happen to be a small blonde on the premises?
I've looked around. Not even a big blonde.
Uh-huh. Means the crowd gave her an opportunity to duck out, too. Trav.
Yes?
Hasn't the police department got a couple of other lieutenants they occasionally use?
I was phoning your place when you left. I got Jake.
Oh. And the news from Vermont was?
You'd left. With another car on your trail.
So you sent out an alarm?
Yep.
Thanks. What were you phoning me about?
The identity of the corpse in your office.
William Cheney?
Yes, I... Hey, wait a minute. How did you know who he was?
The small blonde.
She must have been a very knowledgeable small blonde.
Maybe. She'd also been married to William Cheney.
Hmm. And wanted you to do what?
Find his killer. Trav, what's the department got on Cheney?
Thief of sundry and movable items, notably jewels.
Big job recently?
Suspected the Horsham deal.
Well.
Not much, so far as quantity goes. One medium-sized necklace. Only it happens to be worth around $100,000.
Give me quality over quantity any time. Which is what Cheney and his boss must have figured. Which is also what Cheney figured.
Now you've lost me.
Cheney was holding out on the necklace, I'll bet.
I was on my way to Cheney's house when you interrupted. Would you like to come along?
Very much. If I can arrange to have my head brought with me. But I was pleasantly surprised. My head stayed with me. We got to Cheney's place. Cheney, understandably enough, wasn't home. Neither was the necklace. We made sure of that.
Well, wherever he hid it, it wasn't here.
No.
Funny thing. You can see his wife left him. Not a dress in the place or a pair of women's shoes, but he's kept her furniture around.
Yeah. He wanted her to come back. I guess he didn't disturb anything.
No. Her cosmetics all over the place. Perfume stuff.
Yeah. Nice perfume. Hey.
What?
Newspaper.
So I see. What was the idea, fishing it out from under all the used face tissues?
Front page article is folded to.
Paper's 3 days old. Horsham's story broke 3 days ago.
Which means Cheney was on the run for 3 days before they got to him in my office.
Maybe he had the necklace on him?
Then they'd have lost interest in me, but they didn't.
No. Then the necklace is still among the missing. So far as Horsham, who owns it, is concerned, and so far as, who else?
So far as John Hurley is concerned, I think.
The small blonde gave you Hurley's name?
Yeah.
It might be a lead.
Why not try it?
John Hurley's been a bad boy for some time now. The department's got lots of warrants out for him. Trouble's been, nobody's found him to serve them on him.
He must be around.
Oh, I'm sure he is.
Not half as sure as I am. I'm the one he's been spraying bullets at.
We can always issue another warrant.
I don't doubt it. The only thing is, I'd like to be around when it happens. Around and alive. That, for the time being, was that. Trav returned to wherever lieutenants of police returned in the middle of the night, and I got some work done. Not finding Hurley. No private detective can come even close to the police when it comes to tracing people. The thing is, I didn't waste time looking for Hurley. I concentrated on a small blonde. According to what your fleet dispatcher tells me, you guys work the cab stand here nights.
That's right, bud.
Three of you. The one I want is the one that knows a guy named Cheney. The address is 2906.
Larchmont. Apartment 3B.
You're the man I want. You generally take his calls?
Yep.
You other guys, Yeah. $5 apiece make you happy?
Sure, okay.
Okay. Now, this Cheney was married, wasn't he?
You digging up stuff for a divorce case?
No. Matter of fact, you won't be called upon to testify to anything. You know what his wife looks like?
Yeah. Blonde. Small.
Fine. Now, maybe she did this during the daytime. If she did, I'm sunk. But I've got a feeling the nighttime is the time a gal generally moves out. Some time ago, she left Larchmont. With suitcases, but no husband.
You're not guessing.
Not anymore. She use your cab?
Yeah.
Where'd you take her?
The other guys rated 5 apiece.
You rate 25.
Thanks. 3912 East 67.
Thanks. Maybe I just wanted to see a small blonde again. It's one of the pleasanter things that happens to a private detective. But that wasn't the way I saw it, which could be why I didn't feel pleasant when I got to Doris Cheney's place.
Who is it?
Barry Craig.
I can't...
Mrs. Cheney.
Oh, all right. Come in.
Thanks.
Hello, Craig.
Hello. You'd be Hurley, wouldn't you?
Not only would be, Craig, and...
Speak softly and carry a big gun?
You've got a gift, Craig. Gift of expression. I couldn't have thought of that in a year.
Maybe you've never tried. Now I've seen the gun, you can put it away.
You're too broad across the shoulders, Craig. You wouldn't have much trouble handling me. If I didn't wave the gun around, so to speak.
I don't anticipate much trouble anyway.
Dear me, don't tell me you're one of those unbelievable characters who isn't afraid of a gun.
Of course I'm afraid of a gun.
Well, then?
I can't see any reason for you to use it on me, that's all.
Let's hope so, however skeptical we are.
Hope I didn't damage your car too badly.
Doesn't matter, it wasn't mine to start with.
Doris.
You were unconscious, Barry. I saw Hurley get out of his car. I ran, I had to.
Sure. How long's Hurley been here?
Well, just a couple of minutes.
In that case, he hasn't found the necklace yet, has he?
Craig, now I'm really surprised. Fancy her admitting that. Or was it a slip of the tongue?
Pretty obvious, isn't it?
Maybe. But it takes a rare man to recognize the obvious. My congratulations, Craig. Now, if you don't mind, Doris, my dear.
I don't have the necklace.
Now, you see, Craig? She won't admit the obvious.
Maybe she's frightened. Hurley, if she turns the necklace over to you, what then?
You mean, will I be nasty? Kill people? Why should I? Police are after me anyway.
All right. The necklace is in her bag.
Barry!
Bag? Ah, here it is.
She kept plucking at it when she came to consult me. I thought there might be a gun in it, but...
Not a gun at all. The necklace?
Yeah.
Well, Craig, you were quite right. There's no need for me to bother you at all.
Please drop your gun, Mr. Hurley. I'm terribly nervous.
I've dropped it. Comes of having eyes for only the mercenary. And I should have kept them on you.
Please, Barry, call the police.
Yeah. No question about Hurley's being the man who trailed us in that car. Man responsible for the jewel robbery. The phone... Oh, yeah.
Not to mention murdering my husband.
Let's not mention it.
What?
Because he didn't. Sorry, telephone wires do get tangled around people's arms, don't they? I'll take the gun.
Neatly done. Sorry, I can't stay to admire.
You're staying. We're all staying till the police come. And then a thief will go to jail and a murderess...
No!
...to her punishment.
Some of it I've got, Barry.
Fine, Trev.
Whoever killed Cheney took the necklace. But Hurley was still after it, so...
He didn't kill Cheney. More than that, Trav, if Hurley had the necklace, why would he have bothered keeping after me?
Well, Doris did.
Doris had to. She had to find out if Cheney had told me about her part in the deal. Hurley wouldn't have cared.
Well, that's true enough. So Hurley hung around, socking Jake on the head. And it was Doris in the elevator, wasn't it?
Yeah, she missed. Jake was knocked out. All she did was walk out the front door and wait in my car.
Fits together nicely. I'd like something a little more dramatic, though.
Oh, I can supply that, too. Doris told me she'd left her husband months ago. Hadn't had any contact with him except over the phone.
Well, he could have told her about the robbery over the phone, so that didn't prove anything.
But when we were in Cheney's apartment, we found a newspaper under used facial tissue. Used by a woman, naturally.
Hey, that's right. And the paper was 3 days old.
3 days old, which meant Doris hadn't split up with Cheney till after the robbery, which meant she'd lied. Which means a 3 days old newspaper is going to hang her.
You have been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, The Lonely Corner, was written by Lou Vittis. Next week, it's the strange story titled The Killing Pace, about which Barry Craig has this to say.
Next week, three wise men brain each other, and a lady doll goes to the dogs when a champion greyhound makes a record-breaking sprint into the hereafter. Good night, folks. See you next week.
The National Broadcasting Company has brought you William Gargan, starring as Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Featured in the role of Jake was Parker Fennelly. This is Don Pardo speaking. Mark Twain used to say, "Everybody talks about the weather, but nobody does anything about it." We might add, "Everybody talks about the bad conditions in our schools, but nobody does anything about it." But no, that wouldn't be quite fair. Today, good citizens all over the country are working to improve our schools. It's true that in many communities, schools are outmoded, run down, and overcrowded. But in most of those communities, intelligent, responsible citizens are joining together to improve conditions. If you'd like to do your part, join and work with local civic organizations that are trying to make educational conditions better. If you'd like to know what other communities are doing to improve their schools, just write to the National Citizens Commission for the Public Schools, 2 West 45th Street, New York, 36, New York. That's the National Citizens Commission for the Public Schools, 2 West 45th Street, New York, 36, New York. Remember, better schools build a stronger America. Now enjoy Dragnet, starring Jack Webb on the NBC Radio Network.
That does it for Case Closed this week. Hope you enjoyed the shows. You can find more Sherlock Holmes, Barry Craig, Case Closed, and all types of other old-time radio at relicradio.com. You'll also find a link there to our Shoutcast stream. If you'd like to help support it all, a donate button. Your donations make this all possible. Thank you to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for relicradio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.